Mr. President Emeritus, distinguished guests, and ladies and gentlemen, it is a great pleasure to welcome you all to this significant ceremony today. It has a very deep meaning for many here, and I trust that it will be an impressive occasion for our students of 1965. May you long remember it. A very special welcome must be extended to the original faculty members, of whom 19 are with us here. In looking over the list, I was interested to observe that 11 of the 19 were associated with agriculture, horticulture, or botany. One was in the Department of Mining, one in geology, and one in forestry. What a recommendation for the great outdoors. May I also express a warm welcome to the members of the class of 1915, of whom there are 27 present. One hesitates to mention individuals, but I know you would wish me to say a special welcome to Mrs. Sherwood Lett, who has been such a staunch friend of the university. We sorely miss her late husband in such a gathering as this. Among this group are Miss Isabel McMillan, who was vice president of the Alma Mater Society in 1915-16, and Miss Mabel Lanning, who was head of the loan desk of the library for 30 years. I think perhaps this is an appropriate time to read to you greetings which we received from the University of Victoria. The Chancellor, the Board of Governors, the Senate, and the faculty of the University of Victoria to the Chancellor, the Board of Governors, the Senate, and the faculty of the University of British Columbia. Greetings. The University of Victoria, with cordial goodwill, congratulates the University of British Columbia upon the 50th anniversary of the beginning of lectures in the Fairview buildings. This university had its birth 50 years ago yesterday, when on Thursday, the 30th of September, 1915, the first lectures were delivered in the old Fairview buildings on the present site of the Vancouver General Hospital. As one strolls about this campus in 1965, with buildings arising on every side, with the ever-present roar of the bulldozer and the cement truck, with the ceaseless coming and going of 16,000 students, one cannot help but remember with nostalgia, and not a little regret, the origins of this great university, when life moved more slowly, more sedately, when there seemed to be more time to study, to dream, to reflect, to discuss, to meet one's friends. I know the dangers of living in the past. I know that self-deception comes with dreaming of a golden age when all seemed better. In the last two decades, each of us has seen changes of the most spectacular kind going on in every area of education, from primary school to postgraduate training. We know that expansion, size, and bigness are upon us with all their urgent demands, and that these are conditions we must accept at universities if we are to discharge our mission. Yet I hope no one will be unduly critical of me if I recall with a certain sense of loss a unique atmosphere which once existed on this campus when it was very young, when professors and students alike felt themselves caught up in a great adventure, when the major problem of transportation to the campus was not where to park the automobile, but how a tardy and athletic undergraduate might outsprint a streetcar driven by a conductor whose sole mission in life, or so it seemed, was to try to make you miss your connection and so your lecture. This great university, which numbers among its graduates some 42,000 men and women who have distinguished themselves in every area of human activity, and some of whom have held the highest and most responsible posts which society can confer, this great university was singularly blessed in its origins to have members of the professorial staff who dreamed of what one day might be. To the infant University of British Columbia came men whose training and intellectual capacities might have taken them to posts in any of the older and long-established universities, either in Europe or elsewhere in North America. Instead, they chose to come here to the West Coast, to be present at the birth of the child, to nourish it and foster it during its formative years. In the process, they built a university which today enjoys the highest of reputations in the academic world for the quality of its teaching, its scholarship, and its research. Those who came first were in a very real sense pioneers of higher education in British Columbia. And in those days, the frontier was not a place for the weak in spirit. Their problems were not ours, to be sure, but they came to a task which demanded unusual courage and resolution, and in view of the circumstances, not a little ingenuity and genius for improvisation. Buildings were totally inadequate, budgets were pathetically small, library facilities existed largely in the offices of the professors themselves. And even then we were overcrowded, a condition which, like death, taxes, and statistics, seems ever present with us. And yet, as always when human beings undertake missions which seem impossible, there was a unique spirit of cooperation, of camaraderie, of dedication, which made the burdens the easier and the tasks the lighter. The new university rapidly outgrew the old buildings, and our students, led by men of the quality and caliber of the late Chief Justice Sherwood Lett, made a great trek and mounted a great campaign for the building of a new university here on the site at West Point Grey. And in the execution of their plan, they marched straight into history. I remember those days well. I came from a small town in the interior of this province to the university not too long after its birth. Those were the years of great ferment in education, and perhaps we shall never again experience on our campus the unusual feeling of warmth and understanding which existed between students, between members of the faculty, between the students and the faculty. By our standards of today, by physical standards, the university had nothing. And yet there was everywhere a scholarly environment, intense, satisfying, stimulating, which made those old wooden shells into academies of learning and foyers for the arts, the letters, and the sciences. Some of the men who were part of that great adventure are here in this building today. Others are now dead, and some of these many years. At this ceremony today, we salute and honor and remember these good friends. For even the most recently arrived freshman of the class of 1965 is the direct beneficiary of all that was accomplished when the University of British Columbia was more dream than substance, more vision than reality. I cannot mention them all, and I am conscious of the grave omissions I may make, but let me remember some of them whose lectures I had the privilege to attend. The witty, the urbane, the sometimes cynical master teacher, Dr. Sedgwick, striding the lecture room as though it were a stage on which Hamlet and Lear and Macbeth moved before us. Dr. Ashton, professor of French, so learned in the world of classicism that we youthful and would-be speakers of that language sat in awe of his knowledge of French and tremendous erudition in literature. Dr. Lemuel Robertson, who made the Parthenon appear before our eyes and peopled the streets of old Athens with Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle. Professor Max Eastman, veritable man of the Renaissance with his vast knowledge and understanding of history. Professor Henry Angus, an erudite man, learned in his own field of political science as well as in many others, and a great and good teacher. As you know, the Social Sciences Building was named after him yesterday. Dr. Theodore Teddy Boggs, head of the Department of Economics, a witty, understanding, and brilliant teacher, beloved by all his students. Dean Daniel Buchanan, who taught the wonders and beauties of pure abstract thought in his lectures on mathematics. Dean Brock, wise, savant, understanding, totally human and humane, and whose son David is present with us today. Professor F.G.C. Wood, whose lectures on the novel will remain always with us, and after whom our theater has been so rightly named. Dean Soward, professor of history, head of that department, dean of graduate studies, and author of the history of this university, tuum est, and is still doing a full day's work on the campus. Professor Colonel Dr. Harry Logan, who in so many ways and in his own person epitomizes the early spirit of the University of British Columbia. Does any man more deservedly merit the name of soldier, scholar, savant, and gentleman? I am mentioning here Mr. Justice Arthur Lord, not a member of the professorial staff, but a member of the class of 1915 and of the best that this university has given in the service of this province and this nation, and from whom you will hear later on in this program. And here, seated before me, Dr. Leonard S. Klink, who came to this campus as a Dean of Agriculture and was president during those strange and disturbed days after the First World War. President, too, during the long and troubled years of a Great Depression. How well each of his colleagues remembers his complete sense of dedication to this university. How deeply each of us prizes the contributions he made to this academic community by his resolution, by his dedication. These are some of those who helped build the University of British Columbia in days which may seem remote to some, but which to many of us are as fresh in memory as the events of last week. To such men we owe debts which cannot be paid. To such men we owe respect, esteem, and admiration. As Chancellor of the University, I acknowledge those debts. As a student of the University of the past, I express my gratitude, my thanks, and all my affection.